You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. Happy hump day to each and every one of you here in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. As the shutdown drags on, I think it would behoove us all to remind ourselves who is responsible here. Take a listen.
Of the responsibility, if indeed there is a shutdown of our government.
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate, who's running things in Washington. So I really think the pressure is on the president.
Again, just so that we all know who's responsible, but thank God Speaker Mike Johnson is on the case. He's brought House Republicans back and is going to formally gavel in the House because he's got a strategy to negotiate in good faith with Democrats, bring everybody together, and make sure that Americans have access to affordable health care. No, he doesn't. In fact, he told everybody yesterday that he has no strategy whatsoever. Take a listen.
I don't have any strategy, Manu. I'm doing the right thing, the clearly obvious thing, the traditional thing. That's exactly what Chuck Schumer voted for in March of this year and gave impassioned speeches was the right and only thing.
Let's be clear, Mike. Circumstances have changed since the last time in this very same administration, Democrats did vote for a continuing resolution, much to the ire of many Americans and certainly their base. The change in circumstances, Speaker Johnson, in case you forgot, is that you all pushed the big, brutal bill. You have championed the brutalization of working Americans, families that work hard but still end up living on the edge in favor of what? Tax breaks for mega corporations, billionaires and 100 millionaires, the folks with names on buildings, trust funds that will feed their families without an hour, minute, or seconds worth of work into the future and beyond. That is what's going on. That's the difference between what happened earlier this year and Democrats' very principled, very specific objection today to continuing to fund a government. I haven't even got into the utter lawlessness and disrespect for court orders that the Trump administration is engaging in on a very much daily basis. I haven't even gotten into the fact that Donald Trump is exercising warlike powers, which his deputy chief of staff claims are plenary, unlimited, uncheckable powers to kill citizens of other nations and international waters without the presentation of evidence or the hearing of that evidence because they're criminals, not enemy combatants. I haven't even talked about the fact that Donald Trump just declares that there are uprisings and rebellions that are actually protests and is deploying our National Guard as if he were a king. All of this is going on, of course. And Republicans, not only in the big brutal bill, not only through the billionaire-led DOGE cuts, slash and burn, they haven't been able to prove that they've saved a penny of taxpayer money, not only are those things hurting real Americans, not only are federal workers not getting paid, which apparently Donald Trump is going to condition back pay on whether or not a federal worker is a Democrat or not, and how he would figure that out, and why that's okay to litmus test federal employees who are just doing their jobs. Again, not particularly constitutional. But on top of all of this terribleness, which Mike Johnson doesn't seem to grapple with on a daily basis, anybody else think he reminds you of Ralphie from A Christmas Story? A little bit? I don't know. All of that terribleness is happening, and this is going on. The gutting of critical federal agencies, these mass layoffs, again, targeting Democrats or Democrat programs, according to the president. And I want you to take a moment as I describe these layoffs and the crippling of these various departments and divisions within these executive branch agencies. I want you to try to discern a theme here, okay? So I'm going to describe them. And you and I, let's engage together and let's try to determine what the common thread here. Why is it these departments, these programs, these divisions that are having their staffs fired, which is not required, which is solely the purview of the White House? Why is it these programs? Let's learn together here. The Education Department's Office for Civil Rights. This follows, again, mass layoffs earlier this year led by Elon Musk, the billionaire overlord of apparently all of America. The Office of Civil Rights in the Education Department has now closed 7 of 12 regional offices, and the remaining attorneys apparently have caseloads exceeding 300. As of this summer, the office had a backlog of 25,000 cases. My God. In the Education Department, the office that is devoted to improving academic achievement for K through 12 students through grant programs. What possibly could be the point there? Also in the Education Department, employees overseeing the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, a $15 billion special education program, they were just fired. Employees overseeing funding for charter schools. I thought Republicans loved charter schools. Yeah, they're getting fired right now by the White House. Employees within the Education Department that ensure states and school districts follow existing federal law and how they expend federal dollars, including, again, big surprise here, workers that operate the Office of Special Education Programs. Almost all of those people have been fired. Republicans don't have kids with special needs that need IEPs? Okay, so that's Education Department. How about DHHS, the Department of Health and Human Services? They have effectively shut down through these White House-led firings right now, the office within HHS that distributed funding to high-poverty communities to combat disease and communicable infections. More than half of the dismissals, as we learned about coming off of the Midnight Massacre this past Friday, almost half of the dismissals relating to staffers working on measles response and the Ebola outbreak, they were reversed, but just half of them. You might want to know, how is that measles outbreak in the United States going? Well, we have 1,500 confirmed cases of measles across 42 states. This is a 500% increase over last year. This is the highest rate of measles infection that this country has seen in 30 years. But, you know, this they only fired half of the people working on that at the CDC. Other people straight out fired, they didn't bring them back because of some coding error, were workers at the HHS with top secret clearance responsible for monitoring, protecting the U.S. from biological, chemical, and nuclear threats. Well, that makes good sense. Now, just this Sunday, Margaret Brennan asked Vice President Vance about the error that was made at the CDC, okay? And I think it would be interesting to listen to the vice president explain, gee whiz, if you're firing thousands, and the estimates are now well over 4,000 federal employees fired just right now by the White House during the shutdown, and you're getting some of this wrong, like, shouldn't you maybe think about what you're doing? Listen to this exchange.
CBS did confirm on Saturday that the Trump administration went and rescinded some of the layoffs of hundreds of CDC scientists who were mistakenly laid off on Friday and then told Saturday that's not the case. But some of them were involved with the federal measles response. Some of them were involved with the response on Ebola. How does a mistake like this happen? Did the White House even talk to the CDC?
It happened because Chuck Schumer shut down the government, and we're trying to make sure that essential services still function in the face of that shutdown.
But that was a White House decision to lay off these individuals. You heard the president talking about that. That wasn't Chuck Schumer's decision. I understand your broader point on the negotiations, but the layoffs came from the president and the White House.
But my point is, Margaret, that we have to do layoffs because we have to preserve necessary resources to do the most critical things that
the
government does.
What a liar, liar, pants on fire. But Margaret, yeah, the two things have nothing to do with one another, you nitwit. I'm so sick of these guys getting on the air and lying. Democrats didn't fire workers when Republicans didn't vote for continuing resolutions. This isn't required. And by the way, it's beside the point. Even if it is required, and you're doing this to preserve essential services, gee whiz, JD, I would sure as heck think that those that combat measles outbreaks, those that are responsible for monitoring and protecting the U.S. from biological, chemical, and nuclear threats, that these might be, you know, essential services. That we want people in the Office of Special Education to make sure that whether a family is Democrat, Republican, Independent, or I never, ever, ever watch the news, that their child gets the services that are guaranteed to that child under federal law. But that's not essential to this president, this presidency, or his vice president, or the MAGA Speaker of the House, who has, quote, no strategy to bring this shutdown to a close. And again, folks, I want us to be thinking very big picture here. What is the theme amongst all of these firings? Okay, now let me move on to the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. Here's who's been fired. People investigate claims of discrimination and abuse of residents in the Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity. Employees of the Office of Public and Indian Housing, including those who conduct inspections and ensure the quality and safety of federally supported housing. The Office of Community Planning and Development, which distributes billions of dollars to fund affordable housing. We don't need more affordable housing here. Yep. I think it's polling at like 90%. Every single American's like, you know what? We need less affordable. No. That's not what's going on. I'd say that's pretty essential, JD. How about just the employees that monitor incoming requests from the public about their federal housing? Those people have been fired. Attorneys that are combating discrimination in federal housing subsidized locations, they've been fired. The EPA, those with specialized experience in monitoring environmental hazards, employees who help reduce waste from recycling and composting, those that regulate waste management and hazardous waste cleanup, not essential. Oh, and at the Treasury, all workers at a federal program that subsidizes small banks in rural poor communities called the Community Development Financial Institutions Fund, yeah, all those folks got fired. What's the theme here? We discuss that when we come back on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can download the Civic Media app, take me with you wherever you are. You can also use that app to find our older shows, even shows from yesterday. And, of course, you can find all of our prior shows wherever you get your favorite podcast from. So you can start at the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us/shows. You can also check out the Maggie Dawn Show on Apple Pods, Spotify, and, again, wherever you get your favorite pods. Please do that. Share it with friends. Because the more people get informed, even when they're ticked off about what I'm saying, maybe it causes somebody to do a little Google. We got a whole encyclopedia right at our fingertips. Do a little Google. Do a little research. Let's get out of our bubbles together. Let's engage. Before the break, I was talking about the layoffs by Donald Trump. These are entirely discretionary. He's, of course, trying to blame the Democrats for this. That's hogwash. This has been the plan of Russell Vogt, the MAGA movement, the Heritage Foundation, the billionaire overlords forever. Why? Because you dismantle and make the federal government dysfunctional. Basically, the billionaire oligarchy here in the United States, and I'm talking about Peter Thiel, who's been traipsing all over talking about the Antichrist. You got fewer people or no government that ensures that air is clean, your water's clean, that we actually have competitive capitalism and not oligarchs that are basically running monopolies to extract all of the wealth of the middle. Anyways, you get the point. I listed, I think, a pretty shocking list of the cuts. And here's the question to you all, like, what's the theme here? The Office of Civil Rights and the Education Department. The folks in the Education Department working on the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Again, the Office of Special Education Programs. The Department of Health and Human Services subdepartment that distributed funding into high poverty communities to combat disease. Anybody catching a theme here? The Office of Fair Housing and Equal Opportunity in HUD, the Office of Public and Indian Housing, the Office of Community Planning and Development, which distributes billions of dollars to fund affordable housing in HUD, the EPA firing hundreds of people that work on hazardous waste cleanup and enforcement of regulations. They're cutting the stuff that matters to small people. And by small, I don't mean to denigrate our power collectively, but I mean the people who can't cut the big checks. That's who they're targeting. That's me, that's you, that's the conservatives on the text line screaming about this right now. We're only 10 months in. You think you're actually feeling the impacts of this stuff? What the Trump administration is doing? No, you're not. Not even close. Again, folks, remember, we here at Civic Media, and me especially, want to hear from you. We've set up a dedicated phone line and email for you to tell us here at Civic all about how the big, brutal bill, the disrespect being shown to middle-class working folks, to entrepreneurs, to gig workers, to farmers, to small business owners, to tell us about how the big, brutal bill, how the shutdown, how this chaos being sown by Donald Trump to line his own pockets and make his billionaire buddies happy, how it's impacting you. That email address is wematter@civicmedia.us. That's wematter@civicmedia.us. And the phone line's 855-755-0771. Yesterday, I spent some time talking about and trying to debunk the fact that the MAGA movement wraps itself in a fit of unbelievable hypocrisy in three things. I talked about the Christianity, the cross that happens, the veneration of Charlie Kirk, Donald Trump, and others. That's part of it. They wrap themselves in the flag, and they wrap themselves in this concept of law and order. All of that is a lie and distractionary. It's meant to try to make some to make them able to say Democrats are the Antichrist and the devil and evil. It's made to permit the MAGA movement to say we're the only true patriots, and anybody who objects, anybody who dares to go to the No Kings protest on Saturday, that means you hate America. These are lies. They're not little lies. They're damn huge, fat, steaming piles of lies. And of course, the law and order thing, that's just made to try to placate the MAGA masses so that they don't realize that what Donald Trump is doing is antithetical to the most basic values that we all should hold dear and protect here in the United States. And I'll get to more of that probably tomorrow. But having talked about Christianity and religion as this distractionary and exclusionary tactic deployed by MAGA, it was really interesting to me that Donald Trump then made the point for me yesterday, calling the left and Democrats literally trading in the devil's ideology. Take a listen to this.
They know that they're failing. They have the devil's ideology, and they're failing, and they know it. They feel it. And they become violent. They seem to become very violent on the left.
Except for the killing of the Minnesota legislator and her husband, except for the attack on Paul Pelosi, on and on and on. And I haven't even shared with you Donald Trump's son, Eric Trump, claiming that they have saved God. They have saved God. I don't know, Christians out there, I think there's something in the Bible about the false worship of idols, those that claim God's power as their own. I don't know, I think there's something about that. When we come back, it is time for Broad Appeal. We're going to talk to a state legislator, a woman who's doing great things to serve the middle class and her incredible background living abroad with her family as a young person. Don't miss it. It speaks to this moment for all of us as Wisconsinites. That's coming up next, 855-75-SIPPIN. Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is Wednesday. It is 4:30, and that means it is time for Broad Appeal. I've got an incredibly fascinating legislator that we're going to talk to in just a moment here on the program, but I wanted to try to squeeze a couple of callers in. Jack from Merrimack, thanks for hanging out on the phone line. What you got for us?
Well, I have a list of a few things I'd like to read.
They're fairly short.
Okay, pick two, because I got a guest waiting for us. Pick two, Jack. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'm charismatic speaker, crafty politician, distinct physical appearance, utterly lawless, selfish, ambitious, egomaniac, greedy materialist, controlling, and I could go on and on. But who does this sound like that we know? These, by the way, are characteristics of the Antichrist as listed in the Bible. Now, I'm not a biblical scholar, but I have found the references.
So yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it, Jack. I just want to say this. I'm never going to call anybody an antichrist. I personally have taken pains to never call anything evil. I try not to name call. And that's for very particular reasons. I don't think it advances our discussion much at all. I don't think it's helpful to the overall dialogue. But I will not shy away from, you know, when something quacks, has webbed feet and feathers. I'm going to simply call that a duck. And to me, I've always drawn a very clear line between arguing about the stuff and calling names, because I don't think it's helpful. I also think at base, our elected officials are reflections of us. We, the voters, bear the ultimate responsibility for what is going on in this country. With that, folks, and if you're on the lines, we've got some great guests coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. That's going to give us some more time to engage with callers. So folks, hang out on those lines. Feel free to get your thoughts together. We're going to be talking about how to bridge the divide, what the latest Marquette poll says about political violence, our perception of some of our key institutions. And we're going to be joined by a UW professor at the top of the hour, who's an expert in voter engagement. Civic dialogue. Oh my goodness, that actually used to be a thing. So we're going to open it up. We're going to explore how do we make this better? Because it has to get better. I don't want us to be in the same place in 4 years. It would be absolutely soul crushing. With that, and again, with this plea to everyone that our elected officials on both sides of the aisle are in many ways a reflection of us collectively. I'm extraordinarily happy and excited to talk with my next Broad Appeal guest. She is representative, Brienne Brown of Wisconsin Assembly District 46. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Brienne. It's so lovely to have you with us, Representative.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Now, I'll just say this to you. If you might want to check your camera input or make sure your camera is on, we'd love to be able to see you because we got folks watching on YouTube. Also, you can watch on Instagram, Facebook, as well as, what am I forgetting? Instagram, Facebook, I think maybe X. Just search for Maggie Dawn Show. So, Representative, if you can check your camera, that would be great. But let's jump into it. I wanted to start with a little bit of your family's background, my technical producer, Jacob, had me do a little play on words. This segment we call Broad Appeal, but you are a broad from abroad in this, in this segment. You had an incredibly fascinating background with your dad, who was in the Air Force, served in Vietnam. You ended up moving to Iran with your folks. Your dad was a military attaché to the Shah of Iran. Quite an experience, quite an introduction to public service. What was that like for you as a young woman?
It was exciting. Both my parents were Vietnam veterans, and my mom was a combat nurse. So we were one of those rare families where we lived overseas, and both parents were there. Because they were both colonels in the Air Force. So my dad was he was definitely a cowboy. He was a fighter pilot. He drove around with an orange car with the doors welded shut, and and he would put a flak jacket on me to take me to Montessori, and people shot at us. He thought he made it look like a game or seem like a game. I mean, I thought it was just this big exciting thing. It wasn't until, you know, later on when I realized, oh, I was in a lot of danger, and my dad just made it seem fun. So
that's absolutely incredible. And it just brings to mind for me the fact that we have folks, not just in our military, not just in the State Department, not just in the Foreign Service, but at all levels of government, that truly show up every day. They give of themselves. They are public servants in the most basic definition of the word, and they come from all kinds of political backgrounds and life experiences. And that's the way it's supposed to be. We're supposed to have a big variety of folks working in government with all kinds of different viewpoints. It works best that way. Tell us a little bit, Brienne, if you will, what brought you into public service? Specifically, what encouraged you? What was the catalyst for you running for elected office?
So, I mean, it was definitely a journey. I wanted to be a war journalist when I grew up. I went into journalism. The journalism I looked at was, you know, it was geopolitical journalism. Mm-hmm. So, like, I covered authoritarian regimes, populist leaders. I looked at the backsliding of democracy in other countries like Orban and Hungary and Putin and Russia and Kagame and Rwanda. And, yes. Journalism doesn't really pay the bills, but it is a transferable skill. So I moved into chronic disease epidemiology and studied childhood lead poisoning and pesticide exposure and water contamination. I was kind of a sciencey kid. So I moved into that, but always thinking about how I could be a civil servant of some sort. You know, journalism is one part of our... It keeps our government accountable, right? Yeah. And then I wanted to be a scientist and try to go into that public health sphere as well. So when I did sort of, you know, actually get involved in politics in a different way, it was when I lived in Whitewater and had started a farmer's market, and, you know, was on the library board, and some people came up to me and said, you know, you should be on Common Council. And after about 6 years of that, that's when somebody said, you know, you're really good at talking to people and kind of coming to consensus. Maybe you should try for something bigger. So that's kind of why I'm where I am now.
Brienne, let me just say this. And folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking this half hour with Wisconsin Representative Brienne Brown. She's of Assembly District 43. A couple things jump out immediately to me, Brienne. The first is that you come from a very diverse background, that you've studied and investigated and invested, tried to gain expertise in a lot of different areas. I think that that diversity of background, just like the diversity of thought that I spoke of moments ago, again, is the best of what we hope for, both in elected officials, but in public servants and civil servants writ large. I think that the more experiences people can have that they bring to bear when they're in service of some kind, the more likely people are to listen to others, right? To engage, to want to hear what experts have to say. And you hit on two things. You're talking about lead poisoning, epidemiology, and studying authoritarians. Could it be more topical, Brienne, than what we have today? Just between you and I and all those wonderful folks listening, I actually today started to make a list of sound cuts of our current president talking about some of those very authoritarians that you were talking about, and oftentimes glowing language, including the current president of of Egypt, which I don't get why he's praising him. Whole story for another day. Let's just talk very briefly about what you think the role of state government might be, given your background in public health, and given that we've got the biggest measles outbreak our country has seen in 30 years, truly shocking. At the same time, we've got a head of DHS that peddles in basically the fringe of science that has substituted one-off qualitative case reviews for good quantitative scientific method, peer-reviewed mass of published scientific studies. In this moment, what do you think the role of the state government should be from a pretty apolitical perspective in trying to inform the public, protect public health, and basically help us all be healthier together as a state?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I went into epidemiology in the first place, because I saw that science journalists weren't necessarily covering science well. They'd be like, oh, butter's good for you today, and now butter's bad for you. And I'm like, wait a second. Have you ever heard of a meta study? Have you really dug into like years of research that's been done? And that is how science is. I mean, science truly, if it's being done right, and you know, and usually it's the civil servants who are doing it right, I mean, they're trying to prove themselves wrong. There's the null hypothesis in science, and you're supposed to say, I think this, but now I'm going to try to prove myself wrong from all different aspects of this. And that's good science, because you're constantly trying to make sure that you're seeing what your mistakes are and learning from that. And I think the role of state government is honestly to allow that space for scientists to do the work. When I was working in lead poisoning and pesticide poisoning, the state government, I was working in Texas at the time, but the state government cut longitudinal research funding, which longitudinal means you're studying it over 20 or 30 years. And they were like, why are you taking so long to study pesticide poisoning? And we're like, do you realize somebody gets brain cancer 40 years later? We have to study this yes. over a period of time. And we have to make the calls, and we have to do, you know, the numbers and do statistical analysis, and it's going to take a while. So I think that's the role of state government, is to actually trust their scientists and their state agencies and their experts, because they've been taking, they went to school for this, and then they are basically devoting tons and tons of time to make sure they're gathering the data and proving themselves wrong constantly, right? If they're coming forward with a rule or, you know, a suggestion, they've studied it. And if they have to change it, they will, right? Because they're constantly looking at whether or not it actually applies next year or next week.
Yeah, it's remarkable to me, you know, the CDC's vaccine panel, their review panel, just changed the vaccine schedules, which RFK basically promised to not do in his confirmation hearing. I don't know if they'll maybe crack open an investigation for lying to Congress by RFK. Never mind, they won't do that. But what it brought up to me, and I talked about this on this program, was that I was shocked. I listened to hours of this hearing over 2 days. I heard supposed or purported experts elevate into the discussion their own family's one-off experience. It was shocking. I heard them refer to studies that were point-in-time qualitative case review, meaning there was no testing. It wasn't right. longitudinal over a long period of time. It was a researcher that basically just gathered some descriptions of cases that might raise some interesting questions. That's what those studies are used for, to raise the questions that then are subjected to scientific study over a long period of time. Right. I was shocked by this. What do you think you can do specifically in state government to help restore public trust in our public health officials? And we got just about a minute left. We'll come back to this on the other side, but let's get you started here.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, allow your experts to make the rules. I mean, they are looking at all of the data, right? And they're looking at years and years worth of data. I mean, qualitative is important. Anecdotal is important. It can inform the data to a degree, but honestly, to a degree, right?
Yeah.
It's just super important to allow people to look at all of that data themselves and figure out what the real answer is, and not just go, oh, but my sister, like that doesn't work. That's not scientific.
It was mind blowing. Stay put, everybody. We're going to continue this discussion about the role of ego for elected officials when they're dealing with experts with Representative Brienne Brown.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wednesday. We are in the 4:30 block, and so it is our weekly installment of Broad Appeal, where I talk to female elected officials, candidates, activists, organizers, and just generally interesting ladies to talk to, because women, again, I think have broad appeal, bring something that is desperately needed into our public discourse, especially these days. You know what I'm saying? This afternoon, we're talking with Representative Brienne Brown of Assembly District 43. She has an absolutely fascinating background, worked in journalism and then moved on to public health. During the break, Brienne, we were hitting on something that I think that there's this information cycle that happens. And that is, and I've seen this firsthand as a lawyer and economist and somebody that worked in government for a long time. As the fourth estate has been gobbled up by social media, right? And we've got so much clickbait. There are fewer journalists covering a broader aperture, a broader scope of topics, which means the journalists themselves over time can't develop as much expertise in a given subject. So their coverage, frankly, isn't as good as you would hope. You have these attacks, I think, that are politicized, that are handy, useful in a moment or two to motivate people, largely driven by fear, that attacks public trust in science and public health writ large. We saw so much of that coming out of COVID. And then you have the intersection of those things, the fourth estate that's supposed to be holding our elected officials and government officials accountable, this degradation of public trust in public health civil servants. And then we insert the elected official, who is by definition a generalist, who is not an expert in all of the things that you have to legislate. And I think we sometimes end up in this very opportunistically driven cycle of really unvetted, unreliable, and frankly just conspiracy-laden approaches to things that aren't really well-founded in reality. Having worked on basically all sides of that trifecta, Brienne, how do we break through that?
Well, I do think so. I mean, I was in journalism, you know, I went to one of the best journalism schools in the country 25 years ago. And I would say, first of all, if you're watching it on TV, it's not real journalism. I mean, it's a talking head. Somebody gave them something to do. They're going to spout a lot of opinions. I mean, real journalism really is in the words that are written down. You know, newspaper journalists, I would even say magazines better than newspaper, because they get months to research something. Newspaper, maybe they get a week. And then newspaper, because they're like gobbling each other up, now you've got four newspaper companies that own everything, yep. Which means they're cutting their journalists. They're recycling news. The local journalism is going away. In fact, we're looking at in the legislature, some of us are looking at maybe figuring out a way to get people to buy local journalism again, right? Like support your local newspaper. They're covering the baseball team. They're covering your common council. Something a little bit bigger than that is not doing that, right? So, you know, look at your local stuff and read it. And I know reading's hard. You know, there's so much coming at us. There's so much. I get it. We've got email. We've got, you know, TikTok. We've got all the stuff. But if you want real news, you got to read your news. And the more local it is, the better. I think that's one of the ways to establish trust again, is like, if that guy is coming to your common council meeting every other week, you know who that guy is. He lives in town and he's going to do his very best to be accountable to you. And that's part of the problem when things get monopolized, or when you're finding it just sort of thrown out there with the trolls on Facebook, who is it putting all that information out there? Like, there's no accountability whatsoever. And you know, journalism is supposed to keep everybody else accountable, but we have to realize that we need to keep them accountable too. And that means keep it local.
Folks, again, this is Representative Brienne Brown of Assembly District 43. I hate it when I agree with everything that a guest says, but I agree with everything that you said in spades. It's one of the gaps that civic media is trying to fill. We have a completely separate news arm with local journalists and reporters. We try to report on the local football and basketball and softball games and volleyball games. We want people re-engaging with news because it's about what's happening down the street. And I feel deeply the same way about the television news and even what I do. I'm consuming so much information within a given news cycle that I often, the nerd in me, doesn't get that deep dive satisfaction that I want to truly understand the ins and outs of something. Let's just ask you, Representative, what are some of the news sources, the magazines, the investigative reporting that you rely on for some of your information?
Sure. So I read a couple of foreign newspapers because they always have a different take on what's going on in terms of what America's doing. I mean, again, we have conglomerates that run our media. A lot of it's based on entertainment. And if it bleeds, it bleeds, it reads. You know, so I think I just said that wrong. But the point is, like, if it's exciting, they'll report it. If it's not so exciting, but still important, they don't report on it. So I read Deutsche Presse, Agentur. I read The Economist. I like The Atlantic. I think Atlantic Monthly is great. That's a U.S. magazine, but it's fantastic. I read The New Yorker, and Foreign Affairs. I read Foreign Affairs magazine too.
I used to explain the difference between me and my roommate when I lived in New York. I was getting the Foreign Policy Review, Foreign Affairs magazine, The Economist. I think she got Vogue, and that was fine because she worked in entertainment, and I'm a big dork. I also think Rolling Stone has been putting out some really great news reporting. Again, that's more in-depth. I've always relied on The Economist. I think Atlantic does an incredible job. I look to ProPublica. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking to see what is being talked about in European media, in Asian media, and African media, because they have a very different viewpoint. We've got
Teen Vogue is fantastic.
It is very cool. Brianne, will you come back really soon and we're going to talk about all of your legislative priorities, because I went down the nerd rabbit hole with you. I would really appreciate that. Folks, she is Assemblywoman Brianne Brown, epidemiologist, journalist, elected official extraordinaire, proudly serving Assembly District 43. When we come back, I talk with Professor Barry Burton, as well as Charles Franklin, about the state of our democratic discourse. Don't miss it.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.